Good evening. I'd like to welcome you to the Emmett County Board of Commissioners for March 4th, 2024, and ask you to please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Ms. Canine, roll call, please.
Commissioner Loftbaum?
Here.
Commissioner Aaron's?
Here.
Commissioner Mapes?
Here.
Commissioner Ginnup?
Here.
Commissioner Gutowski?
Here.
Commissioner White?
Here.
Commissioner Coombs?
Here.
Thank you. First item is the approval of the agenda as presented. Looking for a motion for approval or any changes?
I'll make that motion.
I have a motion. Is there a second? Motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, no discussion. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Next, you have the consent agenda. Any commissioner wishing to pull something off the agenda for a later discussion may do so. If not, we have a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Mr. Chair, I move to approve the consent agenda and all items contained therein and authorize the county administrator to sign the attached items on behalf of the Board of Commissioners.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion on the approval of the agenda? Hearing none. Roll call.
Commissioner Loftbaum?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Ginnup?
Yes.
Commissioner Gutowski?
Here. Yes.
Commissioner Mapes?
Yes.
Commissioner Coombs?
Yes.
Commissioner Aaron's?
Yes.
Thank you. You have the agenda approved. We're to the point of the agenda for public comment. Anyone wishing to address the commission has 3 minutes. Please come to the podium and state your name. Anyone wishing to come forward? Not seeing anyone coming to the podium. We'll now move on to the Emmett County EMS update. Right.
Hi, I'm Brian Patton, the director for Emmett County EMS. I submitted the annual report. It should be in with your packets. What I did for tonight is I just took some of that information, some of those charts and everything, and just put them on a PowerPoint. So this is all the same information that was included in your packet through here. So overall last year, our total calls for service, as you can see, 5,427, which was slightly up from 2022, 110 calls up. You can see how it kind of breaks down as far as what we do on that first pie chart there. Interfacility transfers, so patients going from one medical care place to another. We did 941, which was down a little bit from last year. And then overall 911 transports, 2,954, which leaves the rest at about 1,500 no transports where we respond and either do an assessment, provide care, or determine that there isn't anything that we really need to do and we get cleared on those. That's pretty much an overall breakdown of how those goes or how that went. Daily averages, we typically get, like I say, an average of 14.86 calls per day. That does change a little bit seasonally. It's not too uncommon to have several days a month, however, where that increases up into the 20s. I went back through and looked at the year to try to find what our highest transport day was, and it was 27. It was in July, and we transported 27 patients that day. In that 24-hour period. So it just depends on the time of year how busy we stay. If you look at it overall for 5 years, though, to kind of see what's trending overall with the agency, you can go back to 2019 with a little over 5,200. 2020 and 2021, that's when we hit into COVID. So what I actually did is I took a look at those 2 years, and when you add them together and divide it, we pretty much come to a trend in there. And what we noticed in that trend was things got really quiet in about May and June of that year, but then in November we started actually seeing surges in a lot of the COVID patients in the area, and our transports went up quite a bit. So we were not extremely busy in the summer of 2020, but it heavily increased kind of over the course of that winter, so it did average out. But we're on a little bit of a slow trend up, approximately 400 more calls for service this year than we did back in 2019, and we expect that'll pretty much stay consistent based on everything that happens in the area, demographics of our population, etc. Busyness, people always ask us when our busy times are, so I threw some information up here. You can see that overall month-wise, July is definitely our busiest. June and August go there as well, but there aren't really major taper offs for the other months. I mean, we stay pretty busy all year long with those surges in the summer. And for whatever reason, just as an interesting point, Mondays and Thursdays are the busiest. So no idea why on that. And at any given time between, 2 p.m. and 4 p.m. is probably when we're going to have our surges as well for calls. And those really are independent as well for 911 versus calls for transports from medical facilities. It really does trend. Those days and those times are the busiest as well. So kind of interesting. Most people think evenings or weekends, but it's not really the way that it panned out last year. Breaking it up, too, on where we actually responded to in Emmett County, kind of as expected, based on population, you can see our biggest area is the city of Petoskey, followed closely by Bear Creek Township. But one of the things that I kind of wanted to point out on this as well is if you look at Mackinac City and then include the part of Mackinac Township that we cover, we ran 340 calls last year just in Mackinac last summer, which is, a little bit over a third of what we ran in Bear Creek and Petoskey. So we do get quite a bit of calls there. And then obviously throughout the county, one of those things that we have to deal with and manage on a daily basis is a nice, long, skinny county with a lot of residents in between. So maintaining ambulance coverage can be a bit of a challenge for us sometimes, but that's what we had overall. So I know a lot of people are interested in that. Also, just some interesting information. We drove 260,462 miles last year on our ambulances. Just under 60,000 of those were actually transport mileage. We are on track. Most of the time when I come up here to talk to you, I'm usually asking for a remount or something else with vehicles. But just to let you know that we are on track with that through 2025 still. And we have continually saved 40% by remounting versus the cost of a new ambulance, and there's no reason to expect why over the next 5 to 10 years we won't be continuing that trend to save as much money as possible. We usually run them about 300,000 miles, sometimes a little bit over, and we do our best to maximize those mileage as they get close and kind of time it out so that we don't have all of them in the same year. We really want to stretch it out as much as possible. Budget-wise. Also, preventative maintenance. We've been doing really good preventative maintenance-wise. Our per-mile cost for maintenance and repairs is about 80% what the national average is. We're right around 28, 29 cents a mile for maintenance costs, and national average is up a little over 35 or so. So we think we're doing pretty good on that by doing the preventative maintenance. And again, the most important part is that we have to have that 100% reliability as much as we can, or at least try for that. To make sure we don't have breakdowns, which thankfully we have really very few breakdowns, and we didn't have any with patients last year, patients on board. So, overall staffing-wise, just kind of a general list of our staff. So we do have 29 full-time staff, four, including myself. There's four of us in the office administratively, and then the rest are all road staff, nine part-time staff. One of the things that we did see last year, which was somewhat of a challenge, is we had 11 full-time staff leave the department. Now, not all of them were long-term. I would say I think two or three of those employees actually were hired in 2023 and then left again in 2023. Didn't work out. We were able to find some new employees to fill. We do still have two full-time paramedic positions open. And so we're working to try to recruit them as well. Some of the challenges that we have is recruiting people in from outside, just like every other business in the county, bringing new people in, housing, things like that. So we've really had to focus on training internally. Over the course of 2022 and 2023, they're actually just finishing up right now. I have four full-time EMTs who are in school at North Central, and they'll be actually obtaining their paramedic credentials in another 3 months, I want to say. They'll be pretty close. So through some grants through the college, some other grants that we got, we were able to help get them through school as well. And I know two of them would not have had that opportunity had it not been for that, and we definitely saved them all from going into a lot of debt and getting there faster, which is kind of the trend with a lot of public safety positions these days, helping them out as much as we can with education. As I did mention, though, some of those staff moved on. We did lose two to nursing. I've got another staff member in nursing school now. It seems to be one of those progression steps. You get into EMS and they want to go into nursing. I lost another to a dental hygienist, which is the first time I've ever had somebody go from EMS into dentistry. But that was a good move overall. So for them. Number of calls by patient age. This is something that we're trying to track a little bit more. We haven't had good numbers on these from our software over the years, but as you can see, our biggest population that we're transporting are patients between the ages of 75 and 84. And I know that the Commission on Aging and several other people have been here and presented how those numbers are changing and how our population is getting a little bit older. So, you know, we continue to kind of see that trend as far as who we're running on and the, you know, the patients that way, and our call volume to steadily go up in direct correlation with those numbers. Most of our people tend to ask what we get called for the most, so this was our top 15 of what we call primary impressions. This is what the EMS providers have said was wrong with the patient. Generalized weakness kind of falls under, you know, just really anything. We're only allowed by the state and the federal government to select from a list of about 45 things, so it prevents entry. So this is kind of what we come into overall. But traumatic injuries, 477. You can see some chest pain, cardiac complaints still up in the couple hundreds, and then some of our other more common ones. There's two on this list, though, that I did want to talk about because they're things that we've been working on as far as initiatives last year and into this year, and those are the overdoses that we've had in the county and our cardiac arrests. So starting out with our cardiac arrests, we were actually called for 37 cardiac arrests in the county last year. 31 of those we were able to do something. They had happened within the time frame, so EMS was able to do provide full treatment to the best of our ability. Out of those, whenever we do a cardiac arrest, our goal is what we call in the business ROSC, or return of spontaneous circulation, and that means basically we're able to get a pulse back or get that heart beating on its own. And in order to do that, there's a lot of things that have to come into play. We have to start chest compressions to get blood circulating to the brain. We have to move air in and out, and we have to manage an airway. We're probably going to provide some electrical therapy, a shock, something else to the heart, and then, of course, IV access and medication. A lot of things to do very quickly, especially when we typically have two people responding initially, and then hopefully some other first responders or other people showing up on scene. One of the things that we did last year through one of our purchases is we upgraded our mechanical CPR devices to the Lucases. And you can see the Lucases are a very compact device. They're battery operated instead of oxygen operated. So the other ones were very cumbersome to use. We have used those now throughout the year. And out of our 31 cardiac arrests, we were able to obtain ROSC 11 times. So that means we got the pulse back. Unfortunately, the survivability wasn't as high as that, but we did have, as far as our data right now, we had 6 survivable cardiac arrests last year, which is a pretty good percentage. We were very happy with that based on our skill. Like I say, in 2023, the National Institute of Health stated that only 8% of cardiac arrests where EMS provides care do survive. So we're doing the best we can with our small numbers, you know, in those situations where it matters. Each of those devices has been a little bit. They were about $12,000, $13,000 per device, but we expect, longevity-wise, we expect at least a decade, if not 15 years out of them. So, amortized over those years, it's not as bad. But, yeah, they were expensive. But prior to that, like I say, we're using an oxygen-powered device, so you typically had to have a couple people working on that just to keep it in place. It wasn't nearly as efficient. So this is one of the things that allows us to focus on all the other things that's important when we're very limited on CPR. The other challenge, too, is that the AHA says that only 40% of out-of-hospital cardiac arrests does somebody start doing bystander CPR. So that's one of the other things that we try to focus as much as we can, is getting people to, you know, take CPR classes, offer them when we can, to kind of get that information out in the community, because that really makes a difference as well. So the other area that we focused on, and we had some changes, and we have some more changes going on as well, are the overdoses within the county. So we were called for 37 patients last year suspected of overdosing on opioids. 7 of those 37 were actually given the nasal Narcan treatment by first responders before EMS arrived. And then another 18 of those patients were given Narcan upon EMS arrival to reverse the symptoms. The others of those didn't actually need the Narcan. We were able to treat them with other methods. But the important part of this is we've now been working for the last 6 months, and it's just come into our current protocols, actually the beginning of this month. The hospital medical control that we operate under is going to follow the state protocols of making sure that all first responder agencies, all first responders, and EMS agencies are supplied with Narcan, including Narcan that can be left behind with instructional information. So they're working right now to put together packets so that can be left behind with family members or on scene that offer, you know, some treatment options and some safety things, but then also potentially getting more Narcan out into the public so that for situations like that, those patients can receive treatment, that life-saving treatment, you know, even before we get here. So one of the things that we're working on overall community-wide. One of the other things we've been working very closely with, or closely on, is the Northern Michigan McLaren's Trauma Program. So right now, McLaren is considered a level two trauma center, and they just got an extension of that for another year before their next accreditation process. And really what that means is if there is a car accident, of which we had 264 motor vehicle accidents, we transported about 100 patients from those. If we get on scene and we assess that somebody has very significant trauma, we activate and we call either a level one or a level two trauma. And what that means is from the field, before we even transport, the hospital assembles the resources available. It could be anesthesiology, surgeons, nurses. They might block off operating rooms. They will clear the CT. They will clear x-ray so that as soon as we arrive, all of their resources are ready to go and active. In order to make that system work, we have to do a lot of training and a lot of communicating with the hospital so that, you know, we trust what they're going to do and they trust what we're going to do. So we focus on that very heavily. And one of the things that I know made a difference in their obtaining the extension for another year was how they interfaced with EMS, because the whole activation program doesn't work without EMS and field activation. So we did a lot with them as far as working on some different committees and establishing protocols and doing training. One of the benefits of that, too, is they were able to get us approximately a $4,000 grant to purchase training equipment for trauma specifically. So we've been rolling that out to our staff as well to increase our trauma response and trauma skills. Stroke is another very important training situation that we work with very closely with the hospital, because it really does take a lot of training to providers and the hospital staff, again, to make sure we're on the same page. Stroke is very much the same way. If we get on scene and we recognize a stroke, we call into the hospital and we activate what we call a code stroke, and that puts all of their resources in place. So we all have to be on that same page, so that literally a phone call or a radio call says McLaren 40 Alpha 1 calling a code stroke, and that's all the conversation that's necessary for them to trust and to put all their resources in place. We did several of my crews this year were recognized specifically for their timing, and I think I have a slide that does talk about what we look for in that as well, but for their timing of quick recognition, quick activation of the system, and then quick transport. Oh, there we go. Yeah, we look at our stroke metrics from, you know, how long does it take us to diagnose the stroke, when do we activate, the patient contact to transport, the time we spend on scene, and then the hospital measures the time that we arrive at the ED until treatment is received. McLaren is actually ranked one of the highest hospitals in the state for how short that time is. And a lot of that is just goes down to training and practice and the time that we invest into that, because we know it makes such a huge difference. Some of the other things that we do as far as community involvement is this year we actually hosted at our Epler station the Sharm Public Safety Camp. Some of you might be familiar. Sharm has hosted for years a college for kids, and it's been all over with different topics. Well, this year they broke it out into a public safety camp, really got everybody involved from the sheriff's department, the state police, the Coast Guard was there, Marine Patrol was there, but we hosted it at our facility for these students to come in, where they could go around to different stations to see what everybody did, what all the different public safety sectors do, to try to get their interest up so that hopefully this is a career that they'll follow into. We did have emergency management. We had a representative from the FBI. It ended up just being a great day. We opened up the entire station and hosted them in. We're going to do that again this year as well, hopefully with more students. I want to say we had 45 to 50 students last year that came in. In addition to that, we also participate in the Sharm career fairs. Those are anywhere from the lower high school freshman, sophomore, and then junior, seniors. They break them up. Typically, we host those over at North Central Michigan College, and it gives us a great opportunity to let people know what it takes to get into the field of EMS and all the benefits and challenges and all the reasons why we like it, to hopefully try to recruit as much staff as possible. We're about to do the Petoskey Middle School Career Day. We did that last year as well. We go into the daycares. We get invited pretty much anywhere where there's kids that are interested in ambulances and people in uniform. We go in and do a lot of PR in those different areas. So for 2024, some of the big things that we have coming up is our millage renewal in August. So we're going to be asking for a renewal of that at the existing rate. The millage does provide roughly 55% of my department's funding. The rest of the funding for our costs all come from billing and other services that we provide, transport of patients. So we'll be doing a lot of education and information sessions out there for the public to kind of let them know what it is we're asking for and how we run as a department. The other thing that we're going to continue to do is try to work and recruit some new staff. I do have some new EMTs that just graduated EMT school, so we're going to bring on them on board, try to do a little bit of an apprenticeship program to transition them in. That usually takes about 60 to 90 days before we can get somebody that's fresh out of school. Even though they've just spent 4 months in school, it takes about 60 to 90 days before they can be one of the two people licensed on an ambulance. Otherwise, they do a third ride or like an apprenticeship. Also, paramedics, in order to get to be a paramedic beyond that, we're looking at an additional 2 years. I do have two full-time EMTs that I'm looking for funding and grants right now to try to send them to paramedic school in the fall. So hopefully that will help get some more paramedics into our agency over the next coming years. We also have quite a few changes this year because of the state medical protocols as far as what medications we're allowed to carry, what medications we're allowed to give. Some of our treatment protocols, those are all directed from the state, so they just changed those. March 1st they went into effect, so we're going to be doing a lot of training on those. Some of the other things that people don't know, when we go to type our reports, it's the NEMSIS, we call it, National EMS Information System. The reports that we type when we give care to a patient have 596 data fields that we potentially have to fill out for every patient care. And we are ranked on our compliance with that. Luckily, our compliance has been really good over the last few years, but now they've expanded it. I think they added about 150 new fields, so our spring and summer training will be working on documentation along with all the patient care things that we have to do. We've also been having some pretty good success hosting local emergency medical responders, some of the fire departments, those first responder agencies. We've been hosting CEU classes at night at our Epler station, and we've been getting upwards of 25 people coming in every night we host those. So we really try to help them keep their people licensed as well as ours. So that's been a pretty good success. This year as well, too, I know we've talked with a lot of county departments. We're going to try to help out some of the county departments that need CPR and first aid to help get some more of their seasonal residents trained, because every one of those employees in those other departments are around the public. So if anything happens, they can be, within the scope of general CPR and first aid. Those can kind of be our first responders to help the community and help our visitors. So we're going to work a little bit closer with that to be more of a countywide resource for all those departments again this year. One of the other focuses in EMS these days is health and wellness, both physical and mental, of the responders and the providers. A lot of studies have shown that retention of current employees can really be tied to that, so we're looking at trying to increase what we're doing as far as giving our staff resources to make sure they're staying healthy, both physically and mentally, letting them know what resources are available, and encouraging them to seek those out if they need that. Again, all just trying to make sure that we keep our staff here as long as possible. One of the things that I didn't mention on my staffing slide, but I threw it in here on the last one, I know I put my staff's names on your sheets because I wanted you to see who they were and how long they've been here. I have 14 staff members that have been with the department since we started in December of 14. So they've been here over 9 years now. We're going to be celebrating our 10th anniversary coming up this year later. But those are all my staff, and if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't have ambulances on the road responding, providing the level of care that we have. So I do my best to try to work to make sure we have those staff that are here and trained and ready and enjoying their jobs and enjoying their patient contacts out there with the public. But you can see 9 years of service all the way down to, I have my newest employee, Grady. He's been with us for 2 months, so, and he's been doing a great job so far. But it's definitely a challenge with this many staff, keeping everybody going through and trained and up to date on everything. And I guess that was all I pretty much had for tonight. So if you have any questions on anything.
Questions for Brian?
I talked long enough so there's no questions.
Good job.
All right, thanks.
Thank you for keeping us safe.
Thank you. Thanks for keeping me alive.
Yes, we do have one that went through the stroke program.
Yeah.
Next is the administrative report. Mr. Boyer.
Good evening. What's not on my report is we just received notification today that Shell Grant was awarded. We will receive a grant for $300,000 for homeowner improvements in Emmett County. So we'll look forward to that, getting the information back to you. In my report, I just gave you some updates on Parks and Recreation, what we're doing out there, and continuing to do maintenance at the facilities. We'll find out tomorrow at our Parks and Rec Board meeting. They put the drop ceiling in at the equestrian building, so hopefully that will reduce some of that echo that we receive in that building. There was a nice article in MLive about the Dark Sky Park and the programs that we've got going on. Many of us attended the State of the Community. I don't really need to go with that. The Chamber did an update of what's going on throughout Emmett County. I'm happy to report that the Crooked River Locks, there's been an update from the Army Corps in some of the projects that they've done out there. They've upgraded the electrical out there, the new control system, that's the area that we were having the problem. They have looked at the well that's out there, and I don't think that they're ready. It looks like the casing that goes into the ground might have collapsed. So there'll be more work on that, and same with the design on the restroom. They are ordering a backup generator that will be a mobile unit. If there is an issue, hopefully that will be deployed, and we can keep the locks opened this year. That is the big push. Planning and zoning, I gave you an update. I don't need to go through that. But as we go into the spring, you'll see in the proposals and the bids on the street that we have quite a few projects coming up. One of the big ones is up at the Headlands, Dark Sky Park. That is the parking lot expansion that went out to bid last week. So that is to give that additional parking at the Headlands. Material management, we've been talking about that. There's a consultant coming in to help DPW put that plan together, which is a requirement, and the sheriff will be upgrading the pistols that they carry, the optics and the holsters they have. And we have another bid on the street right now for information technology, and that is for the jail services. That's the tablets, the phone system, the video visitation at the site. I did include a couple of programs Emmett County is hosting through planning on the waterfront stabilization programs. That's in your package too, so please take a look at that. It has been in the media. Anybody living on the waterways, this is a great opportunity. There's a bunch of different meetings that you can attend. And that is my report tonight.
Any questions, Mr. Boyer?
Yes, I do have one question. Last summer, excuse me, I talked about the Paradise Lake Association board that I'm on. And we've been successful in eradicating the milfoil weed out of Paradise Lake, at least a part in Emmett County. Part of the lake is in Sheboygan County, and I suggested that maybe you contact Jeff Lawson, Sheboygan County Administrator, and see if they'd be willing to cooperate with us, do their small part of the lake. Have you had any contact with
them? I've had conversations, and there has not been any follow-up. I'll see Jeff next week, and I'll remind them of that and the good work that they've done on the other side, because it certainly has changed that lake.
Okay.
Any other questions for Mr. Boyer? Hearing none, we have no unfinished business. The first item of new business is the MDNR Trust Fund grant for setting a public hearing.
This is to set a public hearing. The grant window is opened up. We're looking at doing an ADA-approved playground at Camp Petasiga, so this is the process to set a public hearing, which is a requirement of the trust fund. At that meeting, we'll discuss a little bit more in detail what we're looking for and have some plans for you to review for playground improvements at Petasiga. This is just to set that public hearing.
Chair, I move for the board to set a public hearing for approval of a grant application to the Michigan Natural Resources Trust Fund for Camp Petasiga accessible playground equipment to be held on Thursday, March 14th, 2024 at 6 p.m. in the Board of Commissioners Room, Emmett County Building, 200 Division Street, Petoskey, Michigan.
I'll second that.
I have a motion and a second. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, roll call, please.
Commissioner Gutowski?
Yes.
Commissioner Ginnett?
Yes.
Commissioner Mapes?
Yes.
Commissioner Lofbaum?
Yes.
Commissioner Kuntz?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Aaron?
Yes.
Thank you. you. Motion carries. Our next item is the Bay Area Pet Resort Stray Animal Services. Mr. Boyer?
As part of the ordinance that we have, we provide animal shelter for any stray animals that are out there. The Bay Area Pet Resort has sold to a new owner. That new owner has come in, continuing to run the existing business, and said that they would continue with the program that we have in place, the contract that's in place. It's through 2025, and our intent in 2025, when this expires, is to go out to bid. There's basically two people in town that would be interested in this. So this is just to continue the services that we have currently, and then it would be out to bid in 2025.
Thank you, Mr. Boyer. We have a motion in front of us, Commissioners.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I move the board approve entering into an agreement with Petoskey Pet Resort, LLC, DBA Bay Area Pet Resort, to provide animal shelter services not to exceed $39,537 per year. The termination of the current agreement with the Bay Area Pet Resort, LLC, and authorize the administrator to sign both documents.
Second.
We have a motion to second. Any discussion on the motion before us? Seeing none, roll call, please.
Commissioner Ahrens?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Kuntz?
Yes.
Commissioner Lochbaum?
Yes.
Commissioner Mapes?
Yes.
Commissioner Ginnup?
Yes.
Commissioner Gutowski?
Yes.
Thank you. Motion carries. Next is the 2024 school inspection agreement for St. Michael's School. Mr. Boyer?
Yes, part of the State Bureau of Construction Code, they are responsible for doing the inspections on schools, but they also allow if your building department has the ability and the manpower to do the inspections through the local building department. St. Michael's has asked us to be that one that goes through their construction. They're going to be doing some work on their existing building with plans to construct a new school, and they've asked us and the building department to oversee that construction. When I say over the, excuse me, the permits, not the construction.
Any questions, Mr. Boyer? If not, we have a motion.
I move that the board approve St. Michael High School's request for annual delegation of school plan review and inspection authority to Emmett County and authorize the chairman of the board to sign the same.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, roll call, please.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Lochbaum?
Yes.
Commissioner Kuntz?
Yes.
Commissioner Mapes?
Yes.
Commissioner
Ginnup?
Yes.
Commissioner Ahrens? Yes. Commissioner Gutowski? Yes. Thank you. Motion carries. Next item is the EMS department purchase of portable 800 megahertz radios.
These are the radios that the staff carry. What's being asked for and which was budgeted for was the approval of additional 10 radios. So when we have major events or it gives the ability for each staff person to have a radio instead of sharing the radios. And you know, throughout the year, we do a lot of special events, and this makes sure we have coverage. It's basically two per station or three per station, I think it was the three radios going to each station. Four at Epler. That makes that.
Any questions?
Chair, I'll make that motion that the board approve the purchase of 10 Motorola APX6000 portable 800 megahertz radios at a total cost of $52,588.50 and authorize the county administrator to sign all required documents to complete the purchase.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion on the motion? Any questions? Seeing none, roll call, please.
Commissioner Gutowski?
Yes.
Commissioner Ahrens?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Ginnup?
Yes.
Commissioner Mapes?
Yes.
Commissioner Kuntz?
Yes.
Commissioner Lochbaum?
Yes.
Thank you. Motion carries. Next is the vehicle purchase for Construction Resources. Mr. Boyd.
Construction Resources has a fleet of 10 vehicles that they use, their inspectors use to travel throughout the county. Four of these vehicles are scheduled to be replaced this year. They've been working to find replacements. You see the list. They have Jeep Cherokees, Patriots, and they're going to the Chevy Equinox is their vehicle of choice. This funding comes out and will be transferred out of their fund, which is not a general fund, but it's the construction resources from the cost. They capture that funding, will be put into capital. They're looking for the replacement at each vehicle at $29,565, totaling $118,260.
Motion. What's the board's pleasure?
Chair, I move the board approve the purchase of 4 Chevy Equinox vehicles at a cost of $118,260 and authorize the county administrator to sign all necessary documents to complete the purchase.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
Do they have tires on them?
They're not the best to just to do that.
Okay. Second.
That's the next motion. What do you? Any other questions? Hearing none, roll call, please.
Commissioner Ginnam?
Yes.
Commissioner Loftbaum?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Ahrens?
Yes.
Commissioner Coons?
Yes.
Commissioner Mapes?
Yes.
Commissioner Gutowski?
Yes.
Thank you. Motion passes. So you got them with tires?
Yes. Okay. And a spare.
Wow. Okay. Next, we have on our agenda a resolution to extend the millage and to convene the tax allocation board. Mr. Boyer.
That's exactly what this is. Every 4 years, the Board of Commission is required to pass this resolution for placing the fixed millage on the August primary. This first, there's two steps here. One is to pass this resolution, and the second one actually be placing two people. So the next item will be placing two people on the agenda.
All right. Any questions for Mr. Boyer?
And in the resolution, it outlines what that committee is made up of.
Okay. We have a motion before us.
Mr. Chair, I move the board approve the resolution to extend the millage within the existing separate tax limitations of the county, townships, and intermediate school district, and to convene the tax allocation board.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none. Roll call, please.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Ahrens?
Yes.
Commissioner Gutowski?
Yes.
Commissioner Ginnam?
Yes.
Commissioner Loftbaum?
Yes.
Commissioner Mapes?
Yes.
Commissioner Coons?
Yes.
Thank you. Motion carried. Next is the actual appointment of tax allocation board members. Mr. Boyer.
Right. And I think you received an email from a former attorney, and we have gone through that. This is to appoint one commissioner and one resident at large. Our attorneys have gone through what was sent over, and it is unclear on who is it, the chair or is it commissioner. Our recommendation to you folks would be someone from this board serves on that. I think when you read the intent of it, it was for a person that served on the chair of the finance committee, which we don't have, or Ways and Means Committee, which we don't have. So it really, what we're asking is someone from this board be assigned to that board.
And our legal counsel is okay with us assigning the chair of our...
You know, I think the recommendation would not be to assign the chair just because of...
Just wanted to clarify that.
Just because the intent that was out there, it was the chair of the finance, it wasn't the chair of the board. Okay. So, Joe Ellen is on the line, our attorney, if you would like to... Step in, Joella.
Yes, and I agree exactly with what Dave just told you, that because it could have specified that this position was for the chairperson of the board, but it didn't. It specified another position. It doesn't say you can't do the chairperson, but just out of an abundance of caution that it be someone other than the board chair.
And on the resident side of it, or we did have a person that served on the commission, and Susie, you reached out?
Yes. Jerry Weedman served on the tax allocation board 4 years ago, and I reached out to him, and he is willing to serve on that again.
So we have an option there. So we would need a commissioner, and if there is anybody else, but a person to serve on that, we do have someone that has been on it and is interested in doing it again.
Gutowski, you
want to
do it?
Sure. I move that the board appoint Brian Gutowski as the commissioner member to the county tax allocation board.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion on that motion?
Hearing none, roll call, please, Susie.
Commissioner Gutowski?
Yes.
Commissioner Ginnup?
Yes.
Commissioner Mapes?
Yes.
Commissioner Lofbaum?
Yes.
Commissioner Kuntz?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Ahrens?
Yes.
And I would also recommend Mr. Whedon.
I'll second.
I guess I make the motion to appoint Mr. Whedon.
I'll second that.
Any discussion on the motion before you? Hearing none. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Ahrens?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Kuntz?
Yes.
Commissioner Lofbaum?
Yes.
Commissioner Mapes?
Yes.
Commissioner Ginnup?
Yes.
Commissioner Gutowski?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Any communications besides what we received from Mr. Ingalls?
No.
We are now to that point of the meeting where we have public comment. Anyone wishing to address the board has 3 minutes to come forward to discuss.
Marty Van Berlo on behalf of Construction Resources. It didn't get on the agenda, but I want to personally invite all of the commissioners and anybody else here that would like to attend. Next Wednesday, we have our annual coffee with the inspectors meeting, 10 o'clock at the fairgrounds. We've sent a number of emails out to let the contractors know about this. We've had a good response so far. We have a reminder email going out tomorrow, which last year tripled our people that RSVP'd. So we should have a good turnout again. So you're welcome to attend.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to come forward to address the board? Seeing none, the announcements that we have is that the next Board of Commissioners meeting will be next Thursday, March 14th, at 6 p.m. here in the Board of Commissioners room, 200 Division Street, Petoskey, Michigan, 49770. Looking for a motion to adjourn. Thank you.
Second.
And a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Keep moving right ahead.